Now, Rick Preuss and Lee Cohen, a couple of guys that have dipped into the treat jar one too many times, if you know what I mean.
It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
It's 11:35, and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a guest in the studio, Bill Backus, the owner of A&M Aquatics in Waterton Township. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill, can you explain to our listeners exactly what A&M Aquatics does?
Sure. A&M Aquatics is a wholesaler of marine ornamentals, both livestock, fish, coral, inverts, as well as some dry goods. And we provide those to independent retailers such as Rick at Preuss Animal House and other independents throughout the primarily throughout the Midwest.
Right. Yeah. You distribute down as far as Chicago, I know.
Yeah. We service nationally, but we run company delivery vehicles throughout Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and into Chicago.
And, you know, the listening audience doesn't realize this, but there aren't many in the Midwest saltwater wholesalers in Michigan. There is literally one, and I think that Bill needs to be complimented on the fact that he has created kind of an oasis in the midst of a desert as far as kind of bucking the tradition and bucking the idea that the only way you can get a saltwater fish here in Michigan is to import them in from California. You know, he's done a great job of setting up a facility right here in our own backyard and has the reputation that enables him to do it from this point source. So, Bill, thanks for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. You've been a friend for a long, long time. Let's get a little bit into that because I think it's important for the listening audience to know your background a little bit. We first met, and you were primarily a diver. And tell us a little quick bit about that. You know, I think you and I were both a bit younger at that time.
Sure, Rick. Thanks. I'm from the Mid-Michigan. Graduated high school here and went to college in Florida. After that, I kind of found my way into the marine life hobby as a diver, and what a lot of people don't understand when they're talking about marine life is that a lot of these animals that are kept in the tanks actually start off
from the ocean, right?
Just like Finding Nemo in the movie.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to start my as a diver down in the Florida Keys, made my living going out every day on the boat and doing wild harvest of tropical fish and inverts. And at that point, I think we started talking, and I was trying to get some product back here, and we actually worked together on getting some of our hand-caught fish from Florida up to you at this point.
Yeah, and then what brought you back up to Michigan?
I really had gotten married at that time, and my first daughter was on the way, and I didn't want her to grow up to be a conch. We wanted her to grow up to be a Midwestern girl. And
okay.
So we moved back here and stayed in the business, in the industry, since I couldn't get wet every day full-time. I had to find another way to do it. And we started the wholesale business because we really enjoyed dealing with the aquatics. We enjoyed dealing with the challenges, if you will, of bringing this product from reef to the retail. And it was something that we had a passion for, and we just kind of developed the business over the years.
And one thing that you said you had a real passion for, and I wanted to make sure we bring this up, is the people, the livelihood of these islands that these fish come from. I mean, the reality is, you know, they don't have the GM plant that's not too far away to go to and get a job. Talk a little bit about that, because I really think that we really have to tip our hat off to the value of what this industry can and does do on a daily basis to keep those people fed and a sense of pride and livelihood.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rick. Most of the livestock that we're dealing with is coming from a third world nation, and it's caught by divers going out in maybe a dugout canoe or swimming offshore. And these guys have absolutely no option as far as a way to feed their family other than by going out into that ocean and getting product. They don't have a Michigan State that they can go to work for, or General Motors, as you say, or even a Quality Dairy. And their only option is to go out and try to harvest something from the ocean. And what there's been many studies done, and anybody will attest to the fact that that is familiar with the wild harvest or food fish industry, that per kilo versus dollar, the marine ornamentals is the highest value of any product coming out of the ocean. We could sell a, you know, I don't know what you might sell a shrimp for in your store, but I'm sure it's several dollars. And we could also go over to, not to pick on them, but any local seafood restaurant and
right.
And have several shrimp for $10.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when people look at the dead shrimp and they're all shelled up and whatnot, they don't have their pretty little eyeballs and their little antennas and stuff, and it's just a pile of something. They don't realize each one of those. You know, if we were talking about the number of shrimps that I sell per year, it might be just what might scoop in one or two bins at a local food shop. So, and yet there's a lot of economic activity. So it's always struck me that because we sell them by the piece instead of by the pound, and because we kind of cherish their life, you know, when they come into our reef tank, we do everything possible to keep them alive. It changes the whole dynamics, both appreciating those life forms at the island point, you know, these people that are going out and collecting these things, they're collecting this living little animal as opposed to saning up huge amounts of animals and throwing them out by the pound, you know. So I empathize 100% with what you're saying, is that it kind of provides great reward as far as if we're going to have an economy, if we're going to have to continue this human race as we have it. You know, one thing I do like is that this trade is one that can give back a lot. But go ahead.
Great points. What we call this trade is we call it sustainable.
Right.
Everything that's being harvested is highly sustainable. We're harvesting the majority of it in a juvenile life form. And for it to actually reach maturity in the wild, very few pieces of these actually do. They're generally typically eaten. Whereas the food fish industry, they're harvesting more of the adult species, and it's depleted much quicker. So the divers in these third world countries have a much better chance at a sustainable lifestyle by being involved in this industry versus the food fish industry.
Bill, can you help me understand what the process is once these foreign divers go and actually capture these fish? How do they get them from that point to you, and then to Rick, and then to my living room, in a way where they're in such beautiful health and well-maintained? I mean, what is the process that you go through in order to maintain these living forms?
Sure. The first thing I want to touch on really quickly is that when these guys are harvesting, they're harvesting in different areas and different depths, and certain fish are found in the wild at maybe 100 feet, and some fish are found at 10 feet, and some fish are found at 6 feet, and some are in current, some are in. So they're harvesting in different areas, and they do different collection techniques when they're harvesting at different depths. From there, the fish would typically go to an exporter in a more of a major city where they would hold them in tanks, and many of these exporters have absolutely fantastic systems with UV sterilizers and protein skimmers and all the great mechanical filtration that's required to maintain the life. And from there, they would be packaged and shipped via a domestic air carrier or a cargo plane to a port of entry in the U.S. or around the world to an importer such as ourselves. And there they would clear Fish and Wildlife and U.S. Customs, and then they're brought into our facility, and we go through a rigorous process where we do a very slow acclimation process. We do several things to quarantine the fish and bring them back up and build their immune system back up.
Yeah, I want to take just a moment to segue on that, because we can get saltwater fish in, you know, huge variety and whatnot off the East Coast. And I can tell you that most, or the West Coast, and people don't know this, but the point of entry in Los Angeles is kind of like that hub. Well, Bill's made another hub, and it's basically because he does exactly what he's talking about. When you go out there, there's a variety of techniques that individuals use, from kind of bring them in and try to get them in the tanks right away and get them out, to being slow and careful. And the one thing that Bill kind of has set the standards on is that slow and careful. If it's a specific, really sensitive wrasse, he may take 2 days to acclimate that wrasse. There's other fish that he can take, you know, maybe, what, 4 hours or
right.
six
right.
hours to acclimate those fish. Whereas, you know, if you're in a fast-paced society, you know, if it comes in, it doesn't do the same justice to the animal. So that's exactly why we use Bill, and it's fantastic. But go ahead and complete the chain of custody there, buddy.
Thanks, Rick. Well, we would bring those fish in, and like Rick touched on, we go through a very slow acclimation, and it varies by the species and the time frame that they have traveled to get to us. From there, they would go into our system and then on to once they're sold, onto a retailer like Pruce, and from there, Bruce's has a quarantine system that they would continue on through or into their system, depending on the fish, and then on to the hobbyist. And that's the chain of custody. Right?
So I guess my question would be, from the time the fish is caught, how long does it take to get through that chain? Typically, the fastest and the slowest examples.
The fastest example would probably be something that's maybe a Caribbean-based fish, where we have a shorter flights, and they would come up here typically within a week from the time of harvest, and probably to the retailer that same week.
And then maybe another week in our quarantine, and then whatever amount of time it takes before they actually find homes.
Okay.
And in a third world country where there's a lot of travel involved, they may be there for 2 to 3 weeks, and then in our facility for 7 to 10 days. So they may be 30 days in transit.
Okay.
During that time, they're being held and fed. And
I guess my naivete, I would ask the question, I've noticed there's a big variance in the prices of these different fish. Does that affect how long it needs to be kept? For example, a clown trigger, which might be a more expensive fish, does it take longer than a little clownfish, which might be a little bit cheaper? Is the price a part of that equation or not really?
Price is not really a part of the equation. What it really comes down to is doing the best job we can do for the fish and the sensitivity of the fish and the travel time for the fish.
And you remember, a larger fish is going to take more water, and he had to ship it through air freight, and it's going to take a lot more water weight. It's going to be a particular more expensive process depending on the size and type of fish, and it might be that it's more difficult to get some of those deep water fish that he's talking about.
Right.
It might take a diver, you know, where in shallow waters he might be able to collect a good number of those in an hour. That particular animal, it may have been that fish for that hour,
right.
You know, and you got to tank up, and you got to do all the equipment and whatnot. So different fish depend on where they come from in the ocean, what their popularity is, how much it costs to get them here. All of those things weigh into the overall cost of those animals.
Fascinating conversation that we could certainly continue. We've been talking this morning with Bill Backus, the owner of A&M Aquatics in Waterton Township. Bill, thanks so much for coming on the show. We've really enjoyed it.
And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. And Rick, we're going to continue the conversation about saltwater fish with Jim Watling right after the break here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.
If you're out of the listening area, you can hear our show live online. Go to 1320WILS.com and click on the Listen Live link.